From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, a special episode. Today, we ask each other about fun and interesting things that have happened so far this year.
It's us. We're here. I'm Joey. This is what it sounds like.
Whoa. Yo, this is what an Aaron sounds like.
Coming in hot.
Oh.
And this is what a internet historian and executive producer, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
You see how I went so hot?
So hot and then so cool.
It's because it's a fun episode. I'm feeling loose.
Goosey.
Feeling ready.
Betty. Yeah.
Today, we're doing something a little bit different.
Ooh. Oh.
We are doing a lightning conversation segment.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, basically. So today we have a bunch of topics that Joey and Aaron independently brought to me.
Anonymously,
but really. It's only one or the other. And their handwriting is really distinct.
That is true.
I'm going to not so randomly select one at a time. And Aaron and Joey will have time to discuss until I decide that we are moving on to the next one.
At which point you will tell us to shut our mouth when we're talking to you.
Okay, maybe.
I feel like it's going to get increasingly intense. We're just going to start with like, okay. And then it's going to be like, you're done. Yeah. Which I'm with.
Are we ready?
Okay, yes.
Good day, sir.
The first thing that I would like us to talk about is the Keanu Reeves Renaissance.
We both submitted this independently.
Did we really? Yeah. Okay, so my question is Keanu Reeves, what is your evidence that Keanu Reeves is having a renaissance?
I think he's having a renaissance of appreciation that is potentially independent of his film career.
Ooh, interesting.
I pulled up his IMDb and I looked at the past 5 years and I'm like, I like three of these movies, but 100% my appreciation for Keanu Reeves has increased. And I think some of it is about like he's having the late middle-aged, what's his name? Crazy Stupid Love, Abs.
Matthew McConaughey.
Gangster Squad.
No.
Girls Like Him. Hey Girl.
Will Smith.
Meme.
Hey Girl. Johnny McGovern.
He has a band.
There's a very small set
he
of people
in,
that know
He was in Remember the Titans.
Yep. That guy.
Ryan Gosling.
There it is.
He's having a late... This is great radio.
Keep going. We're gonna ride this one out.
He's having like a Ryan Gosling where everyone's appreciating him for things that he's doing outside of his films. Like a big part of this has been John Wick. John Wick has been like a cult like love affair. Mm-hmm. But then all the other stuff is like he shoots his own stories. He like just shows up places and is nice to people. And then everyone's like, oh, he's nice. Well, I guess we like him. But I don't feel like it has anything to do with his film career.
He's a cultural plot polyglot. Yeah. He got like Death Stranding is coming out on PS4 later on this year. He's showing up at people's like events. He's kind of also like a young Bill Murray in that way where he's just like cool and is showing up, you know, around. But then he's always like doing the cameo and Always Be My Baby and sort of like making fun, not even of himself, but just like making this character of ridiculous Keanu Reeves, action star, like whatever. And it feels incongruous in a delightful, self-effacing way.
There's something I wanted to bring up about the Always Be My Maybe point.
Mm-hmm.
Think of other characters who did self-aware, self-deprecating, playing themselves in movies. The only one I could think of off the top of my head was Bill Murray.
Yep.
And that's a pretty radical status to be at, like, Bill Murray. We're in Zombieland. He played himself, like, as, like, a sort of crazy recluse that was alive and, like, walking around his house dressed up as a zombie.
So good.
But, like, he was making fun of himself in Always Be My Maybe. But playing himself, like, that for me is, like, you've reached some kind of status where you can, like, take the piss out of yourself and it's, like, cool.
And I'm ready for Bill and Ted. Like, I didn't even like Bill and Ted's that much growing up, but like,
I did.
What's Bill and Ted?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and its sequel. No, that's the sequel.
Bill and Ted's It was Excellent Adventure and Incredible Journey.
Incredible Journey, yes. So they're two ostensibly stoner slacker kids from California that end up being able to travel through time through a phone booth. And it's quite an incredible journey and excellent adventure.
Sounds like a movie for dudes. Next topic. Billy Porter's style explosion.
I don't know what this is.
Oh, yeah, because maybe I put it in there. Shocker. Well, so my number one question is...
Wait, Joey should ask the question if you know
okay,
what the thing
point,
is.
Okay, fair point, fair point. Okay, you ask the question.
What is Billy Porter and why did he explode?
Okay. So Billy Porter is a Broadway star who I think his one of his biggest moments was on Kinky Boots as the lead character. And then in the past couple of years, he starred on FX's Pose. And as Pose was coming up for its second season earlier in June, he was hosting the Tonys. He was on the red carpet at the Academy Awards. And his looks were just incredible. And this year at the Met Gala, he came out in this like gold phoenix, like amazing thing while being carried in on an Egyptian like rack with a bunch of 8 foot tall, like walking deltoids.
Was it camp?
Twas. I will say, actually, his camp was better than RuPaul's, which is not a controversial opinion, but just still got to say it out loud.
Get your game back together, Ru.
Yes. So, which I guess I have done episodes on that here. But I think that Billy Porter is, what I admire is that he's taking this moment of being sort of out in front and, of course, doing like the press circuit for Pose.
And he's just snatching wigs
right and left. He's letting everybody know what it means to be a style icon, what it means to break convention, why it's important that we look at dress and the way that we wear as an indication of not just how we want others to see us, but about who we are and how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that has nothing to do with other people.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this in different contexts before.
Yeah, the question is that I think is important to bring this back is, do we stan?
Oh, well, duh. Duh. Like, crazy stan for Billy Porter. I mean, in terms of, like, LGBT, like, allies or people of color who are in front and aren't being quieted down, I'm just in awe, and I'm like... Thank you. That's not an easy position to be in.
Does anything else in the world reflect this particular style aesthetic?
Oh, God, I don't know. My favorite look, which is why I don't know, is when they took the curtains from Kinky Boots on Broadway, pulled them down, and created a half tuxedo, half dress for him to wear. And it's amazing. Like, he won many Tony Awards for that role, and it's like... Boom. But I think that there are a lot of instances outside of the past couple of Met Galas where there is a little bit more gender queering of fashion and style. And I think
like
it's happening.
The JVN phenomenon.
Yes. And it's happening. And this is where the Billy Porter moment is happening more. It's happening more with men adopting female codes of dress.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that Billy Porter has been talking about so much, which is that we finally don't blink an eye when women wear pants.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it so, and what are we saying when we say that men can't wear dresses?
Or the OG kilt situation where on The Bachelorette, most recently, all of the guys on The Bachelorette had to fight in kilts. What were you going to say?
I was just going to ask, how does this compare to James...
Gandolfini?
No, the makeup YouTuber, like who's been sort of canceled simultaneously in this, ooh, where he's sort of like there is sort of he's been canceled for a lot of reasons, but it's sort of interesting of seeing two people that felt like they were rising in similar places, and then Bobby Porter sounds like has like continued to rise. Where James? What's his last name?
Charles.
James Charles. Yeah.
Yep. So I think that they are an interesting duo in that Billy Porter seems to be very dedicated to a community. And that community is galvanized by, you know, a similar oppression.
Yeah.
James Charles seems to be just here for beauty. And
here for himself.
And that, like, the explosion in the bad sense that happened to him on YouTube and in his social media channels sort of like was supported by that. People ran away from him as quickly as they could.
They both blew up and one was good and one was bad.
Exactly.
Blurg. Oh, what else blew up? I guess this third topic about how we filmed a black hole.
Yeah! Whoa! Okay. So, ooh, this is going to be it. So where were you, if you remember, when you heard this news?
So I knew because I watch a lot of astronomy YouTube videos.
Nerd!
Totes nerd.
That it was coming. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to expect, to be completely honest. I was just like, as with like a lot of major breakthroughs in astronomy, like you're like, we've just done this incredible thing. You're like, oh my God, let me see it. And then it's just like this terrible picture.
Yes,
you're like,
yes.
You're like, that's what?
Yes.
That's the rings of Uranus. That was not the right choice. I could have picked rings anywhere.
Onion.
Yeah. Venus and Mercury apparently also have rings.
Oh, right.
But
can I ask a question specifically right here? Because why was this picture important?
Because it was the sort of first time that we were confirming a lot of theoretical science with an applied, like, real life, real world example of something. Like, it was a concrete demonstration of things that they were already pretty sure was how light behaved around a black hole, and like what an accretion disk looked like, that ring of the way light is bent around a black hole, and that there would be like effectively like tidal forces. Like, one side is going to be brighter because the light is spinning around toward you on one side, and then it's sort of going away, like that Doppler effect. So it was a confirmation of a lot of important things that scientists were sitting alone in a lab developing. I mean, I don't know how they actually behave. That's just what I imagine. They're locked in like a room by themselves, just writing on a chalkboard, actually writing a dry erase marker on a window, staring out longingly into the quad. I wish I had friends in recess.
The camera swirls around, rotates, yeah. Turn after turn.
Yeah. But it was really important because it was one of those things that, you know, there's a lot of stuff within astronomy, especially where they've developed this concept that all the math plays it out, but they have no way of proving it. And this was something that, like, it took the entire international community. Do you know how, like, the telescope actually worked to take the picture?
Yeah, unironically, no.
Yeah, they basically turned, like, half of the planet into a telescope by putting all of the different telescopes on, like, one side of the Earth facing at the same image at the same time. And so it basically turns the entire like disk of the Earth into the telescope lens.
That is so cool. That is
teamwork?
So cool.
How do you get that many people to be like, here, take my telescope?
Especially right now.
Like, yeah.
The fact that there are still areas in science where we can be and arguably are a pinnacle of international cooperation, given the current social context, is really inspiring and hope-inducing for me.
Yeah, astronomy especially, I think, because of the amount of financial investment that is required, is sort of an area that I've never thought about that until you said it, but is an area where people are, like, coming together to build these, like, massive telescope projects. And science, too, right? Like, the Large Hadron Collider is, like, so many people coming together to build this thing. There's this new project, newish, it's been going on for a while, but it's still not done, of like this massive power plant in Europe that's basically like an international community, like coalition, funding billions of dollars, like, from different places to try and build this experimental power plant that they're hoping can do fusion. I always get fusion and vision confused.
Fusion produces energy. Vision does not.
I have no idea, and I feel dumb.
You taught me that.
But the name sounds like Tesseract, which I also like. That's not actually what it is, but you know.
But it would be cool if it did. You know what else people get around together for, other than science, that like brings, you know, humanity to one thing? Game of Thrones. But forewarning. No spoilers allowed.
Are we past that now?
No, we're not.
We're not?
No.
No.
Well, We both submitted this, and I think we might each have a different question. Mm-hmm. So do you want me to hit mine to you first?
Yeah, sure.
What is wrong with people wanting to refilm the end of a TV show? 35,000 people submitted a petition to HBO to reshoot the end of a TV show. You don't get everything you want.
Oh, I'm holding back from a Rolling Stones moment.
I know.
Yeah. There's one part of me that's really inspired by a loyal fan base and like a loyal fan base essentially taking fanfic to the next level, where it's like, well, it's not just about like wanting to just recreate it on like a message board and people will download it. Like, no. You just did it wrong. You just did it wrong. And the fact that there could actually be this tension between like creators who had TV creators who had to make it up based on their own vision and somebody else who actually created it and hasn't had a chance to like put it down on paper makes that really real. And like, it was objectively bad. Like, there have been plenty of, like, I think Metacritic or somebody else did a breakdown of a series of different series finales over the years. Their critical response and, like, the public's response and viewership numbers and all of this. And this series finale ranked definitely in the lowest quartile. I can't remember exactly where it landed, but it
wasn't good.
It was not good. And, like, it wasn't. It was too fast. It was clunky. And it didn't pay off. It just did not pay off what it had the potential to.
Yeah, it wasn't satisfying in like any of the ways any of the storylines ended.
Now, not to ruin anything else, and I've never seen this, so this I'm assuming. Have you seen Lost?
I watched like the first season, and then I was like, this is kind of jumping the shark already.
I also haven't seen Lost, so I don't think that I can continue this line of questioning. I've just heard that their series finale was awful too.
Yeah.
But I feel like
we can spoil that one. In purgatory.
No. Hey. Oh gosh.
I don't know if
now
that's
we're gonna
true
have
or
to
not.
Give them a heads up at the beginning.
But I literally don't know if that's true or not, is it?
Yeah.
This is true. I never watched it. I've just heard people yelling like, "They're in purgatory, that's what this is."
The goal was to give us an outro. You walked right into
it. Yeah, I'm just like punching myself in my own face.
But I also believe that everybody has the opportunity to just read the fucking books. Like, we'll get there.
That's the problem is that he had like 5 years ago he had the 6 book like finished, just have to go through like a round of edits. It's 5 years later, the book is still not out. He had released like a chapter of it. Like, it was done.
That's true.
But and I heard this on like Love It or Leave It or something like that. Like, he has since, while not finished that book or written the 7th book, has made an entire fictional universe for a video game.
Yep. And it looks amazing. I mean,
what's the game?
I can't remember. It's done with a Japanese studio, and it's actually a different, it sounds like a different universe.
He built like the whole canon of this universe. Meanwhile, everyone's like, give us this book. We just gave you millions and millions of dollars because we loved your content so much. Could you just finish it, please? And he's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, he's busy.
Yeah.
He busy.
Cashing them checks.
Yes.
Guys, I'm throwing in a new topic.
Oh.
Neither of you put this in.
Ooh.
The topic is paper straws.
He's clutching his pearls.
Literally like 8 pearls. So what inspired the paper straw moment, Jess?
On a recent trip to Miami, I was at a very large American-based coffee chain when I ordered an iced coffee drink. Yeah, an iced coffee drink, and received in it, unbeknownst to me, a green paper straw.
You've added yourself.
And as I drink this coffee out walking about, I later look to my hands and I have this green coloration all over my hands that's dripping off the condensation of the cold beverage in the Miami heat. And I'm thinking to myself, not only is this thing disintegrating by the minute, but it's also doing so onto me and I hate everything about this. And I just don't know how to reconcile with that with my feelings on, you know, us trying to eliminate plastic straw waste. Like, well, I don't know what to do with that.
Well, it's funny, like I've had some good paper straw experiences and some bad, and I have a iced coffee in here right now from a local coffee shop that gets different ones all the time. Mm. And then this one is like literally squishing and melting, but other ones are like, they stay stiff and, you know, work for like the whole day. So it's very inconsistent. But the weird part about paper straws is that it's still in a plastic cup. And I think the reason straws in particular have been targeted is because of, like, I mean, there was that video of the straw coming out of the turtle's nose a few mm-hmm. years ago. And I think that is like really pounded into people. It was like a very visceral video that took like several minutes for them to yank this paper or a plastic straw fully out of like a sea turtle's nose.
Oh my God.
It was like into its throat. It was very like intense. And I genuinely think that may have been like a factor why we targeted straws over the cup itself, which is far more plastic.
I mean, you still see them, but the plastic rings around like six cans of Coke and things like that, those, I mean, the images of ducks with those wrapped around their necks and the whole campaign to like snip those before you throw them away,
mm-hmm.
like that was years ago. And now I see many fewer of them than I think I did in the past.
Yeah,
so
there
it
are new
like
innovations on those of like, they're like pop-in tops,
yes.
instead of, and it's a harder plastic.
Yeah.
It's actually using more plastic, but they're reusable.
Yeah. I mean, I, for one, welcome our paper dye leaking overlords in straw form. I think it is an inconvenience. And I think that it will take a while to start figuring out what the right formulation is and like what customers are willing to pay for a functional straw rather than just one that is better for the environment. And I'm hoping that then that will bleed over into other, you know, container solutions. Mm-hmm. Like,
Sippy cup. That was great. Why don't we have those?
And you know what? A certain national chain used to have sippy cup tops. We saw this for a minute.
Yeah.
And then
everyone was like, haha, that's hilarious, but we would have gotten over it. Where are the sippy cups?
Who had this?
A certain national coffee chain.
They weren't green, but if they weren't.
But America runs on them?
No. Okay. Last topic. Something about Zion Williamson and an exploding shoe.
I just want to talk all about Zion.
So, because I need to be refreshed, mm-hmm. who is Zion Williamson and his shoe exploded?
I believe the card said Zion to Zion and the exploding shoe, which I imagined as a children's book series.
Ooh, I like it.
Zion was sort of this athletic phenom that played for Duke this year mm-hmm. and sort of captured the hearts and minds of the sporting world.
Of people who need another savior.
Yeah.
If you remember from a previous episode.
Yeah.
Go click.
But after our episode talking about his hero story and all of that, he had the exploding shoe scandal where he is so athletic and so impressive. I mean, he is 6'8", 280 to 90 pounds. Like, the weights always get confusing, but he's just like, as my dad would say, built like a brick shit house. he's just like just truly an impressive person, to the point where his shoes couldn't contain his sheer power and exploded on the court, and everyone was like freaking out because it may have affected his future in the NBA and all this, and it turned out to be a pretty like a minor knee strain, no permanent damage, it sounds like. But this story of like him going from not being like going into the season the top prospect and like just capturing the minds of everyone, becoming the top prospect, getting drafted first at the draft, after getting drafted first, he started like openly crying and his mom came up and she was crying and they had this moment together and the whole internet was crying. Like, it was just a really powerful moment of someone sort of emerging, not completely from nowhere, but certainly not having that level of stature, and going from like this person people had heard of and seen like some of his high school dunks to being like the most talked about person in the second biggest professional sports league in America. like overnight. It's just such an incredible story.
I mean, I love and am leery of that moment when you see somebody sees the world's attention. And then that is the moment where they gather this incredible power and responsibility to do something with it. And if they're not, so there's a connection here. This weekend, I was watching a lot of Whitney Houston on YouTube at the 1993 Billboard Music Awards doing I Have Nothing. It is worth watching not only because it's a fantastic live performance, but it is Whitney Houston at the moment of her career when she when she gained legend status.
When it was undeniable.
It was like, and you see these people in the crowd. Like,
melting.
Yeah, like this is a captive award show audience, and they are on their feet, like screaming about how good this is before the end of the song. Like for the entire last verse, people are losing their minds. And I think what is scary is when I think about what then the years and what fame did to Whitney as a result of that. It's not fame in the abstract. It's what people did. Like, yeah. Let's be real. It's not, you know, these abstractions. So I look forward to seeing what Zion Williamson can do, because I look at somebody like LeBron, and me, not even as a basketball fan, looks up to that. I'm just like, yes, with great power comes great responsibility. And you are doing it. You are like, you are lifting people, Magic Johnson, like you are lifting people up, and you are a model for what can happen.
Yeah.
And where this can take you.
The draft gave me a ton of hope for a lot of reasons. I mean, both him, Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, like a bunch of the first people that were taken who are really incredible athletes, incredible basketball players, all cried after they got drafted publicly, like openly cried and had these emotional moments. And I felt like it was really powerful demonstration of a healthier version of masculinity. Mm. And for that to be in such like a huge spotlight for young kids to see, like these like grown ass men. I mean, at least for young kids, they're grown ass men. Like, I guess for us, they're kind of kids.
Children.
Yeah. They're like 18 or 19 years old. But for them to cry publicly, and then also in that, after like at the end of his interview right after he got drafted, he cries, his mom comes up, they're just like so happy and proud to have made it to this moment. I think she was a single mom, and then they're like, do you have any words for the Pelicans fans who are watching you in New Orleans right now? And he just like looked into the camera and said, let's dance. And that's, it was just like this awesome, incredible moment. And like they cut to a shot of New Orleans and the crowd just goes like fucking bananas, and like they're like, oh my god, that's like it was awesome. Just like this perfect moment, and it was just so heartwarming to see like that be at least the culmination of like this chapter of things to have ended so positively, and for him to have such like a good head on his shoulders, and I don't know, it was like a really nice moment.
This is beautiful. We begin and end with two explosions.
There's been a lot of explosions.
We also covered outrage from shows, not this particular shoe. But
yeah, people weren't happy with Nike.
From shows to straws and the global cooperation, all to take a look into a telescope of Black Hold'em.
We did a lot in like 26.
So many, so much coverage of fun.
If you guys want to send us any more of these along the way, maybe we'll do another one at the end of the year of 2019 part dos.
Yeah, what are your top phenomena that happen over the next 6 months? Shoot them over to our email address at
criticalnonsense@sylvanlabs.com.
It's not hard to remember, but I just can't. I'm sorry.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in beautiful New York.
We'd like to thank executive producer and cultural capital financier.
Yeah.
Jess Vander. Yeah.
Cultural capital column, am I right? Doric, Ionic, or Corinthian?
We would also like to thank executive producer and maybe a lover of paper straws, we'll never know, Alex Contel.
Do you call him executive producer?
Yeah, oh, shit.
Sound engineer. We'd like to thank designer Nora Mestrich for just playing the hits.
Yeah. Give me a beat. We'd also like to thank our production help crew of Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vaughn.
And as always, Thanks, Alain.
Thank you, Alain.
I would like to thank Coming in Hot.
Yeah, man. Woo! Toasty.
And leaving, I don't know what.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
I'd like to thank Bill O'Reilly for not having a career anymore.
Yes, thank you. But can we poke a hole in his golden parachute?
Done. Valid point. Very, very valid point.
Didn't he get like $150 million for getting fired or something stupid like that?
Kind of, they all do.
Yeah.
Just a little twist. I would also like to thank Janet Jackson for giving us a beat.
Yeah, I would like to thank her for just, you know, I can't think of the song I was trying to think of. Oh. I ruined it.
No, but you know what's not ruined? Zion Williamson's exploded shoe. Oh, wait, I guess it is.
I guess it is, but now, you know what? If that shoe is still out there, it's probably worth like a crazy amount of money now.
It's got
to
be $2.
It's like a $50,000 shoe to because of how big it became.
Yes.
Am I allowed to cut off this section too?
No, not yet. Not yet.
We're done.
We're not done. I would also like to thank QuickTime. Because I still see the logo.
I'd like to thank Jess for her... love of toilet paper.
Yeah.
That's not fake.
The Charmin Forever Roll. This is like the sixth topic that we didn't have time to talk about, but I'm still losing my mind over it, which is not forever. You know.
True.
It's just like as long as the roll.
Not even Charmin can last forever.
Or can it?
Can toilet paper teach you a lesson in impermanence? Today at six.
One ply, two ply, three ply, floor ply. I don't
know. One fish, two fish.
Red fish, ply fish.
Poo fish.
Bye.
Ciao.
This is Critical Nonsense. This week, I cannot.
It's a very interesting.
You're all like, this week, a special episode. This.
Pew, pew.